In this message, and it may become a two-part series, I'd like to take a look at what the world was like, what shaped and guided the daily lives of the people we now know as the Jews, what Jesus really said about the world he found himself in, how has our past understanding colored our Christianity today? How well do we know what the Jewish law in its entirety is? And why is it important for us to get clear in our minds which of the Jewish laws still apply to all Christians today? That seems like a lot, but there may come some answers to questions we never really looked deeply into before. We have always thought we were pretty familiar with Jewish law. However, it may come as a surprise to some of you, and hopefully will give us all something to think about, when we learn that what we find in the books of the Bible, particularly the Old Testament, regarding the Jewish law, is only a thumbnail sketch of what Jesus was up against when he came to this earth as a crusader to introduce the law of love. The moment Jesus came up out of the River Jordan following his immersion by John the Baptizer, in Mark 1, verse 9, at that time Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. As Jesus was coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit descending on him like a dove. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I love. With you I am well pleased." With you I am well pleased. He began his ministry, which involved taking a firm stance against the teachings of the several Jewish religious groups holding sway in Judea and the Galilee around the time of his birth. Isn't that what we've always been taught? He was a rebel, out to change the Jewish life he had lived up to that point. But just what had Jesus been doing up to that point, which we read in Luke 3, verse 23, was about 30 years. What was it that would prompt the voice from heaven to say, "With you, I am well pleased"? Jesus was born a Jew. There's no question of that. His father and his mother Mary were of the Davidic line. Jesus was raised in a devout Jewish home, where he would have been taught to follow the laws and to keep the Sabbath and the holy days. We are told in Scripture, in Luke 2, verse 41, that his parents went up annually to Jerusalem to keep the feast of the Passover. So we know that for approximately 30 years, Jesus was following the Jewish laws. We need to take a look at what those laws were, where they came from, and how deeply embedded in the very psyche of the people these laws were, in order to understand the message of Jesus after his baptism. Most of us have tried sincerely for many years to obey the Jewish laws, as we were taught from what we understood from our personal study of what we knew as the law of Moses. What most of us came to discover was that there was no way humanly possible for us to keep those laws perfectly without ever falling short. What we did not understand, and what I hope to give some insight into, is that the Jewish law is not static. It never has been. It is not once and done. The parts of the law that are oral, not recorded in writing anywhere in the world, are in constant flux. Nobody knows for sure which of those laws are still in effect, which have been replaced by rabbis to reflect the different conditions, and the available amenities in other areas of the globe. As you know, I spent part of my career with the CBC in Yellowknife. And while you, here in Calgary, were keeping the Sabbath from Friday evening until Saturday evening, I was leaving work at noon on Friday when the sun set, and I had to return to work at noon on Saturday to finish my other half day of work. Needs must. When I worked for the Calgary Board of Education, two of my very good friends and colleagues were Jewish. One was from Israel and the other from Russia. They met at the University of Calgary in the 70s and were married. The Passover was a very interesting topic of conversation for us. My children always wanted to bring matzos to school for lunch. They were very popular with their classmates during that week. And my colleague said that traditionally they ate matzos for the evening Seder at the beginning of the Passover, but during the rest of the week, the Israeli used rice as her unleavened choice, while her Russian husband preferred potatoes. It was all a matter of where they had been raised. It was a novelty to them, while it was normal for us, to eat matzos instead of bread. They ate their rice cakes and potato cakes instead. But getting back to the Jewish laws, we've always aspired to Jewish altruism, which is unselfish concern for the welfare of others. But what does the Talmud, the Torah, and the Jewish law say about saving a life, for instance? The life referred to there would not be one of us. It refers only to devout Jews. The laws were for their own people. In the book of Exodus, beginning in chapter 19, we read about God communing with Moses on Mount Sinai. And when Moses brought the message down to the people, they all responded, in verse 8, with, "We will do everything the Lord has said." And in chapter 20, we see the giving of the Ten Commandments. But in addition to the Ten Commandments, when Moses was on Mount Sinai, God gave him other laws which we can read about in Exodus chapters 21 to 23, including instructions for dealing with servants, personal injuries, protection of property, social responsibility, laws of justice and mercy, Sabbath laws, and the three annual festivals. Then, chapters 24 to 31 deal strictly with laws concerning the temple. What we see is that the Ten Commandments were separated out from the other Jewish laws. Why these Ten Commandments are not included in the Talmud, the Torah, or Jewish law is very interesting. But any speculation would be just that, speculation. This brings us to a very important consideration. Who were the commandments and the laws given to? The people who came out of slavery in Egypt were the Hebrews, not yet Israelites nor Jews. How many Jews can you name from the early Old Testament? Moses? Nope. Abraham? No. Noah? No. Jonah? No. There is only one named, Mordecai the Jew, in Esther chapter 2, verse 5. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish. In verse 7, we read that Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, or Esther, whom he had taken as his own daughter when she was orphaned. This is the only reference to a Jew until after the people had come into the land and were divided into the 12 tribes of Israel. Yet Moses was given all the laws with the Ten Commandments separated out before there was a Jewish community. It is also interesting to note that the laws that have made it into the canon of the Bible are not the same laws we would find in the Talmud, the Torah, or Jewish laws. I keep referring to the Jewish laws. These are the laws contained in the oral, not written down, Torah. Another subject entirely, which is separate from the Talmud and the written Torah. It'll become clearer as we get further into the various collections of the laws. I mentioned earlier that for many years we had tried to observe the laws, but we really had no idea what some of those laws were. That's because there are obscure verses in the Bible that refer to laws in the Talmud, the Torah, and the Oral Torah, but which are not explained in detail in the Bible. Some such references include tefillin on your arm and your head. Does anyone here know what tefillin is? You'd have to have some outside knowledge of what tefillin is and how to put it on your arm and your head. What about the tzitzit? That's not in the Bible. Same for the mezuzah or the recital of the Shema. And what about the four species to be taken on the Jewish holy day of Sukkot, or of Tabernacles? During all my years of keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, I had never heard of the four species. Does anyone here know what they are? Just to illustrate how difficult it would be to try and keep all the laws perfectly, I refer you to A.J. Jacobs and his 2008 diary entitled The Year of Living Biblically, One Man's Humble Quest to Follow the Bible as Literally as Possible. It dramatically brings home the strictness and the impossibility of keeping the laws. How about in your own life? Is there no animal fat in your diet? Leviticus 3:16 says, all the fat is the Lord's. Do you eat butter or cheese or drink milk or cream? Would you stone your children if they cursed you? Leviticus 20 verse 9. If anyone curses his father or mother, he must be put to death. And as I look around here, I see that not many of you follow this one. Do you allow your facial hair to grow uncut? Leviticus 19:27. Do not cut the hair at the sides of your head or clip off the edges of your beard. Do you kill homosexuals, as commanded in Leviticus 20:13? If a man lies with a man as one lies with a woman, both of them has done what is detestable. They must be put to death. And what about your clothes? Do you wear mixed fibers, such as cotton polyester or wool and linen? Forbidden in Deuteronomy 22:11. Do not wear clothes of wool and linen woven together. These are just a few among hundreds of examples of laws that are a part of either the Talmud, the written Torah, and the oral Torah. For all our diligence and hard work over the years, overall, it seems we would make a pretty poor case for observing Jewish law. So what is the difference between the covenant and Torah law? We know that the covenant was made with Abram, later Abraham, who was from the land of the Chaldeans. Abraham was not a Jew. In Genesis 11, we read that he was a descendant of Shem, son of Noah. But neither Noah nor his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, were Jews. We find that circumcision was part of the covenant with Abraham and that it survived into Jewish law. But the covenant was made with Abraham, while the Torah and Jewish law was made with the nation of Israel after they had broken the Abrahamic covenant. The Torah was man-made, while the Abrahamic covenant was God-made. If we have thought that Jewish law is somehow from God, the Torah is known as the wisdom of the sages and does not closely follow the Old Testament laws. Keep in mind that the Torah has no divine connection to the laws outlined in the Old Testament. Are you beginning to see a division between the laws Jesus had been raised with and the God-given laws of the Bible that became the message Jesus preached? By the time Jesus appeared on the scene, the Jewish religious and political landscape was under the control of the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes, as well as being heavily influenced by Greek and Roman philosophy. To understand just what Jesus was up against as it relates to the religious and the socio-political climate of the time into which he was born, we would need to gain a deeper understanding of what was being taught in the synagogue, what was being taught in the homes of Jewish people, and what was the influence of the Roman Empire, which ruled Judea and Galilee at that time. Where did those teachings come from? Who were the keepers of those records? And whose best interests were being served by the leaders of the day? The best way to understand these questions would be to take a look at the Talmud, which is divided into six parts, the written Torah, which is a part of the Talmud, and the oral Torah, which is a separate set of laws outside the Talmud. Then we'll be able to take a look at the message Jesus preached, set up alongside the prevailing teachings of his time. Was he really rebelling against the Ten Commandments? Or was there a whole lot more to it than that? This is a good place to take a break. And next time we'll look at the Talmud, the Torah, the Mishnah, and the oral Torah, as they related to the life Jesus led and how they still affect us today. As well, we'll see what Jesus had to say about keeping the law.